morning, everybody. I want you to imagine that you arrive at Soul Survivor and you're just setting your tent up and you see someone nearby who's just camping by themselves. You're with your youth group and this person's just by themselves. So what would we do in that situation? I imagine most of us probably would invite this person to come and be part of our little family for a little while. And you can come and camp with us, we'd say. And let's say they come camp with you, and within a few hours you notice that stuff starts to go missing from your camp. So you realize that some money's gone missing. You realize that your phone has gone missing. You realize that some of your nice trainers have gone missing. And so you try and find it. You do like, find my iPhone or whatever it is. And you ring your phone and you hear this vibration noise coming from this person's tent. So you go inside their little one-man tent and you see inside that tent, there's this massive pile of your stuff. And everybody else's stuff as well. What would we do in a situation like that? I imagine at that point we would have a gentle word with our youth leader and we would gently encourage them to kick this person's head in. And we would get them out of our camp. Why? Because you don't want to be living with somebody who is stealing from you. And what I want to talk about this morning is the fact that I think there's something, not someone, but something in many, many of our lives that is stealing from us. And it's comparison. It's the way that we compare ourselves and what we have and who we are to other people and what they have and who they are. I want to talk about comparison. And this kind of began for me about a month ago when I had a really good day. So, you know, one of those days that at the end of it, you just feel like, wow, that went well. That was satisfying. I was actually at church for a lot of the day and God was doing some good things. Someone became a Christian, which was a real highlight. And I remember walking back in the evening, just feeling just content. You know how you do at the end of when you start the summer holidays or at the end of a great football match or whatever. Just felt content, felt satisfied. And then I got home. And when I got home, I do what I usually do when I get home after the end of a long day, which is I went on Twitter. And I'm just there scrolling through what everybody else has been doing that day. And I remember that there's this person who does something similar to what I do. This guy who lives in another part of the world. And he had posted on Twitter that he'd been speaking at this really big thing. And he put all these photos on there. And by the looks of it, when I read it, it looked like it had gone amazing. And I remember sitting on my sofa back in Watford, looking at what this guy had been doing in another part of the world, having felt very just content and happy and satisfied. And suddenly, all that satisfaction just draining out of me. And I remember I started to compare myself. And I started to feel really low and really down on myself. And really like, oh man, God's using this person and he's not using me. And they get those opportunities and I don't seem to get those opportunities. And what's wrong with me? And I knew what I was doing. And I started to say to myself, don't be an idiot, Andy. Stop doing that. Doesn't matter. It's not about that. And I know it's not about that, but I did it anyway. I couldn't help myself. And for the next 2 days, I ended up feeling really low, not just because I compared myself and found I was inadequate, but because of the fact that one tweet could ruin my entire day. And I'm not sure that I'm the only one, at least I'm hoping, here's hoping, that I'm not the only person who has ever done that. Right, because loads of us, what we do is we compare. And there's two ways to compare yourself to another person. One way is upwards. So that's when we compare ourselves to somebody who's better than we are at something. So maybe we think they're better looking than we are. We think they're better at sport than we are. They're smarter than we are. When you compare yourself upwards, occasionally that's inspiring because you think, oh, I could be better. Most of the time you just feel rubbish. All right, so most of the time it's like, wow, they're so much better looking than me. I feel, you know, not good. And then there's downward comparison, the opposite. And that's where you compare yourself to someone who's worse than you or you think is worse than you at something particularly. So, you know, if you've ever played sport, if you're playing a game of football and you're not very good, but the person next to you is completely useless, then you feel like, wow, I thought I was bad, but you totally suck. You can play again. We should play more together. When you're bad at dancing, I don't know if how many of you were at the Silent Disco last night, but I'm not good at dancing. And yet my strategy is find someone who's worse and stand next to them. And then everybody's looking at him and not at me, and I feel like I'm all right. When guys go to the gym, I don't know how many of you guys go to the gym, but when guys or girls go to the gym, one of the things that I find is when I'm there, the weights machines. Without making it a competition, like overtly, it becomes one. So if I go onto a machine and I have to, you know, the person before me has been lifting a really heavy weight and I have to make it lighter, then I don't feel good. If, however, I go with someone and they're lifting really light weights and then when I get on, I get to kind of make the weight a lot heavier, then I feel like, oh yeah, I'm really pretty good. And I have a strategy now. I try to avoid going to the gym with some of the personal trainers that are in our church and instead I make a point of always going to the gym with Mike. and I feel like, oh, you know, I'm doing okay. In that sense, it's a downward comparison. He's ahead of me in loads of ways, but that's a downward one. And we do that, and what we do is we're almost instinctively trying to find a sense of worth. We're trying to figure out what we're worth, and we match up. We do it how we match up with other people. And the thing that comparison does is it robs you. And one of the things that I've noticed is in the last couple of years, we have become comparison crazy. People have always been doing this, but we've just taken it to another level. And the main reason we've done that is because of social media. It's how much we use social media. And it's not about, you know, there's good stuff about social media, but this is just one of the inevitable consequences of using it loads. Okay, because you know that when you're on social media, and we all do this, we're all presenting the best version of ourselves. So you take a selfie, you put the filter on it, and then you show it to the world. And I am not yet on Instagram, although having seen Tom's photo earlier on, I'm now inspired that I must join Instagram, if only so I can like it. And I've been trying to figure out, okay, I want to get Instagram, but I also want to make sure that people think my life is awesome. So I've been practicing, and there was a weekend, couple of weekends ago, where I thought I'm gonna, you know, download the app and use the filter and just get used to it before kind of like I make my official joining of Instagram. So I remember Saturday morning, I got up and I went for a swim at the Watford Community Pool. And I took a photo when I did that, and I put a filter on it, and this is what came out. Not long after that, I thought, this is Saturday, so I'm going to hang out with some friends. And so I put a little filter on some of my friends, just a light one. There's some friends that, you know, they really get you. You click with them. Some of them have been around for ages. They've seen everything. They're going around the block. And occasionally, because Mike doesn't have many people to hang around with in Watford, I take him to meet some of my friends, and we just hang out together. One of the great things about being in Watford is actually that Mike and I do live down the road from each other. So later on that day, we went around to his house, and then we popped back to my house in the evening, and we watched a film. You can see the Watford skyline in the background there. And after that film, we felt pretty hungry. So I went to my favorite takeaway, which is, of course, McDonald's, and I had myself a cheeseburger from McDonald's, slight filter on that photo. I then had a McFlurry, which was very delicious. And also, you know, on social media, you want to sometimes be real and not put a filter on. And so for your information, the following photos have no filter, hashtag no filter. After McDonald's, we went to Mike's favorite takeaway, and he had what for him was quite a modest meal. He wanted ice cream as well, so we got him an ice cream. I'll just remind you, there is no filter. After that, he felt, you know, people have cheese after a meal, so he had a little bit of cheese just to finish it off. And then as we were driving home, he bought himself quite a large number of Twixes. And he went to bed after that. But I was still like up for it. The night was young. A friend of mine, Johnny, was having a few mates around for a party. So we popped over to his house, had a little house party. And then the next day, I had some free time. And my boy, Jossie, loves going to the park. So I took Josiah out for a little dad time at the park. And we hung out together. So as you can see, I am not yet on Instagram, but I think I kind of got the hang of it. I'm obviously exaggerating to make the point there, but that's kind of how it works. And I know loads of you guys have had Snapchat for years. Again, I haven't got it, but somebody showed me the other day what my face looks like with a Snapchat filter on it. And I was like, oh my word, I look incredible. You know, my eyelashes are amazing. I never realized I had eyelashes until I've seen them in this. And I don't look that good in real life, but I want everyone to think I look that good. So I must download Snapchat. I must get this and show it to the world. And that's what we do. And what happens then, if because that's what everybody's doing and we're all doing it ourselves, is we're really different from how our grandparents used to be. So our grandparents, what they did is they compared themselves to just other people that lived on their street. But we are comparing ourselves to thousands of people 24/7. And it's not that we're comparing ourselves to them. We're comparing ourselves to their profiles or their filters. And so the way it works is you end up comparing your actual face to somebody else's filter. And in that battle, when it's your face against their filter, your face loses every time. All of our faces lose every time because nobody actually looks like that. So we do it, and we're surrounded by it. And you get bombarded with it. So it's look at their perfect bodies. Look at these abs that they seem to have. Look at these biceps that they seem to have. Look at the way they curve in all the right places. Look at that. How do you feel in comparison? Look at the the money that they've got. Look at the way that they've got these incredible houses. Look at that. Look at the cars that they drive. Look at the jobs that they have. Look at the clothes that they wear. Look at the friends that they've got. Look how happy all their friends are. Look how popular they are. See how hilarious they are. Look at the food that they eat, for crying out loud. I eat beans on toast basically every day. These people seem to live off avocado. Like, where do they get them from? Look at that. Look at basically how happy and perfect and whole and complete they seem to be. And am I the only one that feels like my life in comparison is drab and plain and dull and boring? And it's a deeper thing, because it isn't just like, oh man, I wish I had more money. Do you know what it ends up becoming? It's like, I wish I was somebody. I wish I was worth something. And I just don't seem to be. And it's not just, social media makes it worse, but it isn't just on that. You know, you compare yourself to the pretty girl in the youth group. Compare yourself to the guy that seems to, everything just seems to happen for him. Everything seems to go well for him. You compare yourself to that couple in the youth group, we've all got one, who are sickeningly in love in their relationship. And you kind of hate them and want to be them at the same time. And so you end up feeling down on yourself. And the way that it works is twofold. Some of us, what we do, we react to that by thinking, I've got to match up. So we start competing. I've got to fake it till I make it. I've got to try hard to make sure that everybody thinks my life is like their life. However many filters that requires, that is what I will do. And others of us, we don't see it as a competition thing. We just give up. And this is probably me. It's like, you just give up. You just think you're rubbish. I'm not even going to try and compete. It's not that I want to compete with you. You just make me feel terrible about myself. And if there's one thing that can stop us, obviously I'm slightly exaggerating with the social media thing to make the point, but if there's one thing that can stop us from enjoying the life that God has blessed us with and from living out the calling that he has put on us, and we've all got one. You've got your own. I've got mine. For living out the calling that he's put on us particularly is wishing it was somebody else's. And Jesus, there's a story that he tells that I think really speaks to this. And if we get what he's saying, and it's not always easy to hear some of the things that Jesus says, but he says them to set us free. If we get what he's saying here, it will set us free. It will change the joy that we can have in things. It will change the sense of purpose in our lives. And it will set us up to win, not just tomorrow and next week, but for the whole of our lives running for him. So I want to read you that story. So if you have a Bible, you might want to turn with me to Matthew chapter 20. if not, don't worry, the words are going to come up on the screen. This is a story that Jesus tells. So he says, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius, which is like an average day's wage, so let's just call that 60 quid. He agreed to pay them £60 for the day and sent them into his vineyard. So he goes out 6 a.m. in the morning when the working day starts, finds some people, and then he goes out a little bit later. About 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, 'You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right.' So they went. He went out again about noon and about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found still others standing around." So 5 in the afternoon, the working day finished at 6 p.m. roundabout. So 5 in the afternoon, there's only 1 hour of it left. And he goes out, he finds some more people, and he says, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came and each received a denarius, so £60. These are the guys that worked for 1 hour, right at the end of the day. They each get the denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more, as you would, because they've worked 12 times as long. They expected to receive more, but each one of them also received a denarius. And Jesus tells his stories to try and get a reaction from us. So as he's saying this, the people are going to be like, "What? Like, that's not fair. That doesn't make sense." And it says then in verse 11, "When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. 'These who are hired last worked only 1 hour,' they said, 'and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day.' But he answered one of them, 'I am not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go.' I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be first and the first will be last. Now, Jesus' stories are they're clever. Because what they try and get us to do is they try and get us to relate to the wrong people in the story. So I don't know how many people here, you're at college and you're at school, but you've got like a Saturday job or you've got like a weekend job. Just stand up for me. If you're here, but you also happen to have a job like working in a cafe or working in a shop or something like that, let's just applaud these people who go to school and also bring home the bacon. Okay, just stay standing for a minute. What's your name? Say again. Eve. And what do you do for a living? You work in a cafe, so you're a waitress. All right. So Eve, you guys can stand, case standing for a little bit. So Eve's there working in a cafe, wiping tables, mopping stuff up, giving people food, taking it back into the kitchen, eating the rest of their food in the kitchen, which is what I suspect everybody does, finishing off their chips in the kitchen, working hard, right? And Eve starts her day at 6 a.m. in the morning. Now, she's dragged herself out of bed at 4:30, had a shower, got down to the cafe, finally starts the shift. She works and she works and she works. Now, what's the name of a colleague of yours? Lucy. All right. She's working there until 5 o'clock. And then at 5 o'clock, this joker called Lucy rocks up, who's just been in bed for the whole day, drags herself in for the last hour of the cafe, you know, tokenly wipes a couple of tables, you've already done it, finishes off all the food that she can find in the kitchen, and then it comes to the point where Eve and Lucy are going to get paid, and so they go into the kitchen. It's a little bit weird because they pay them cash in hand at this place, it's probably illegal, but they go into the kitchen, and Eve gets paid £60 a day, but before they pay Eve, they pay Lucy, this person that's just turned up for 1 hour. So Lucy's there, and they say, oh, the manager says, hey, come over here, Lucy, I'm going to give you 60 quid, and so Eve's standing there thinking, oh, you know, this is amazing because she got 60 quid for a single hour. I've worked 12 hours, so I'm going to get a whole load more money than that. And then Eve comes up and the manager just gives her 60 quid as well. How do you feel? She feels angry. She's frustrated. If you could see her expression now, it's like she's screaming, but she just can't vocalize it because she's so outraged. Not really. She's just staring back at me looking worried. But she's concerned because you've worked 12 times as long and they get paid the same amount of money. Now, just sit down, everybody who works, congratulations. That sense of outrage, okay, just put yourself in the position of these workers, okay? So they're working in a vineyard, which is even worse than working in a cafe because it's hot and it's sweaty and it's hard work and that the anger that they would have felt, that sense of injustice, that sense of like, yeah, how come that person's getting that, what I want that should be mine. Jesus wants you to feel that emotion, all right? He wants you to be right there with Eve in the cafe with the vineyard worker, talking to the vineyard owner, saying, what's going on? And then he wants us, when we get that, all those emotions that we feel when we compare our lives to somebody else's and think it's not fair that they have that. How come they're blessed in that way? How come everything seems to go well for them? How come they get a relationship and I don't? How come they've got this money and I haven't? He wants you feeling that emotion. And then the vineyard owner speaks to the worker. And the vineyard owner represents God. And he asks him three questions. And the next time we compare ourselves to somebody else, I want to suggest, I've been doing this for a few weeks now, I found it really helpful. I want to suggest that we allow God to ask us the same three questions that the vineyard owner asks the worker in this story. So if you're making notes, question number one is that we want to allow God to ask us, didn't we have a deal? Didn't you and I have a deal, Andy? The way that it's put in the passage is he says, I'm not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? You're really upset, but I seem to remember at 6 a.m. this morning, we shook hands and you were pleased with what I said. It was a fair exchange. You give me a day and I'll give you a day's wage. That's what we agreed early this morning. And I think I've been faithful to that. I've fulfilled my side of the contract. And what's genius about the vineyard owner's questions and God's question to me and to you, don't we have a deal here? What's so good about that is it's forget Lucy, the person that turned up at five in the afternoon. He doesn't even mention her. She doesn't get a look in. It's just, hey, you come and talk to me. Let me just ask you this question. Did we agree or didn't we that it was going to be a denarius? And have I paid you what you were owed? And what's so clever about that is because when we're comparing, what we do is we take our eyes away from God and away from the relationship that we have with him, and we put them onto other people, whether in real life or online. We put them there. And we're not the first people to ever make that mistake. So people have been doing that throughout history, and they do it all the time in the Bible. So one of my favorite stories in the Bible is a sort of the story of Saul and the story of David. And if you know Saul, you'll know that he had everything going for him in his life. He was told that he's a massive guy. He's a handsome guy. He gets made king over the whole of Israel. He wins some battles, but then Saul begins to make some mistakes. And if Saul had Instagram, he would probably have like 500,000 followers. This other guy turns up, David. And David starts to win a few battles. He starts to get a few followers. And there's this particular occasion, you can read about it in 1 Samuel chapter 18, where Saul and David are coming back from a battle. They've both been in a battle together, and they're coming back to the town kind of victorious. And these ladies come out from the town, and it says in verse 7 of chapter 18, as they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands and David tens of thousands. Saul's got 500,000 followers, but David's got 1,000,000. And when they start to say that, Saul gets angry. And I can understand why, because I've been in a similar position. You probably have been as well, where it's not that Saul is comparing himself in this instance to David. It's that a third party are comparing Saul and David, and Saul comes out the loser. Have you ever been in a situation where somebody else is comparing you with someone else? They're like your mum. Oh man, I wish you could be more like this person. Or the girls in the youth group are comparing you to another guy, and you find that you come out with a short straw. Or the guys at school are comparing you to another girl, and it's like you're all right, but they're better. And you feel awful, don't you? I feel incredibly angry when that happens. Saul is angry, and you can appreciate. I heard one preacher talking about this, and he said you've got to also give it to Saul, because not only are they comparing him, they've made a dance about it. This is like a full-on Broadway production where it's like, woohoo, you've got your thousands and David tens of thousands. So they really go into town. And then Saul makes a mistake that so many of us make when we feel like we come out inadequately in a comparison, which is this. You read about it in verse 9. It says, and from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. He watched David. He should have had his eyes on God, but instead he had his eyes on his competition. He had his eyes on David. And again, maybe this is just me, but in my experience, what I do is when I've got someone that I feel like I want to compare myself to, I watch them closely. And it's like, I'm always looking for what they're going to post. And I'm always looking for the opportunities that they're going to have. And I'm always looking to see what's going to happen in their lives. And I, is that just me? I concentrate more on them more than anybody else. And listen to the Lord's question. Okay, so he says, hey, don't worry about them for a second. Just forget about that person just for a minute. Didn't you and I have a deal? What was that deal? You know, when you started this adventure that I've invited you on, what were the terms that we agreed? What were the wages that we set out? And I think you'll find that I've been faithful to the wages. So what was the deal? The deal was, as far as I can remember it, that I would give him my imperfect life, and he would give me his perfect son. That I would give him the mess that I've made of stuff, and he would redeem it. And what that means is he'd take all the stuff that I've messed up and he'd use it somehow for good and for his kingdom. The deal was I'd bring him all my shame and he would wash me clean of it. The deal was I'd bring him all my insecurity and he would give me peace. And he has been faithful. And that's not to say that you don't have days where it's tough and there aren't moments where you don't understand what God is doing, but there's not a single promise that he's made to us that he has failed to keep. There isn't a single promise he's made to you that he's failed to keep. And there'll be times when you feel like he has, and it's okay to feel that. And it's all right to be honest with him and come back at him and say, yeah, but it feels like you haven't fulfilled your side of the deal, Lord. And you know, where is the wages of your son and this peace and this all this stuff that's talked about? Where are the every spiritual blessings that I've heard about in Ephesians chapter 1. I don't feel like I have that. It's good to ask those questions. But at the end of the day, what we will find as we follow him is that he is always faithful to you. He will always keep his promises. That's the first question. Eyes on me. Hey, didn't we have a deal? Haven't I been faithful to that? Here's the second question we might want to let him ask when we're comparing ourselves to the person next door. Question number 2. Don't I have a right to bless who I choose? And the way that he puts it in the passage is, don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Andy, can't I bless who I want? Or do I need your approval for that? Sometimes when he asks us a question like that, it reveals what's going on in our heart. Because my response is, well, actually, it would be great if you could check with me. Because I must know some things that you do not know. Because if you knew how mean and unkind that person was, you would not have blessed her in that way. So I think things probably would go a little bit smoother in the future if you just used me as a sounding board. You can make the final decision, but let's at least discuss it before you pour out your blessing on somebody else. That's the question that he's asking. That's the answer that honestly I feel like I want to give to him half the time. And that's okay. He's okay with that answer. But what we've made a mistake there of thinking, what I have done is, and the story presents it as a wage, but we've begun to believe it really is a wage. All the blessings of God, that they really are earned, when it's all a gift. And there's something scandalous about the mercy of Jesus Christ. There's something outrageous about the grace of God. He just pours it out on people that you think, yep, really, Lord? Them? Like, the way that I think it should work is you bless the people who deserve to be blessed. That means me and some other people that I choose. But you do not bless these people. And Jesus blows that out of the water, and he does it in so many places. But one of the ones I love is in Matthew chapter 5, where he compares the love of God to the weather. And he says that God's love is as indiscriminate as the weather is. And the weather here, we've experienced it in basically every form you could possibly have apart from snow yet. All right, and we've all experienced it, all of us on the campsite. When the sun shines, it does not only shine on certain people. When it rains, it does not only rain on Arsenal supporters, although that might be right and that might be just. It rains on all of us, and the sun shines on all of us. And in the same way, the mercy of God is poured out on all of us. It rains on the righteous and the unrighteous. The sun shines on the good and on the ill. And so it's that thing, his mercy is poured out on everybody. It's all gift. It's all gift. And when he says that to me, when I reflect on that, I'm like, oh, of course it is. That's how I got in. Isn't that how you got in? Because it was his mercy, because it was his grace. And then the third question that he asks, and this is where Jesus kind of builds up always with his questions, and he kind of like right at the end, he just really hits you with it. So the first question is, hey, didn't we have a deal? Second one, can't I bless who I choose? What's that got to do with you? Isn't that how you got in anyway? It was a blessing, wasn't it? You didn't earn this thing, it was a gift. And then the third question, wow, let the Lord ask you this next time you compare yourself. Are you jealous? I hate it when he asks that, because the answer is usually, no. Okay, maybe I am. Maybe if I'm honest, yeah, I'm jealous. The way it comes in the passage is, are you envious because I'm jealous, because I'm generous? And I think the only reason, well, there's probably a few, but I reckon the only reason we allow ourselves to become so enamored with what other people have and so enslaved to wishing that we had somebody else's life and somebody else's call is because we've forgotten what we ourselves have received. And there's this passage in Isaiah, I just want to finish by reading this, right? Where God speaks to the people of Israel who are not happy at the time. And this is what he says. You can find it in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 25. He says, to whom will you compare me? Or who is my equal, says the Holy One. Lift up your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all of these? He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls forth each of them by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. There's not a single star here that's missing. I made all of them, is what he's saying. Why do you complain, Jacob? Put your name there. Why do you say, Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord. My cause is disregarded by my God. Everybody else's cause isn't. Everybody else seems to be fine, but mine is disregarded. And then the Lord says, do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired and weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. And the problem with comparison is it doesn't just steal our joy, it steals our strength. Because the joy of the Lord is our strength. And what happens is we take our eyes off him and we stop enjoying him for a while and we put them on something else. And then all we feel is a hunger that we shouldn't feel because we've been satisfied with the only thing that will ever satisfy us anyway. And the thing that the Lord would say to us ultimately is, you're jealous? Look at me. Were you all comparing? Look at me. I am the incomparable one. You've received the one who you can't compare anything to anyway. Just think about it like this, all right? We've become Christians. And so what have we received when we became Christians? Let's remind ourselves of some of that stuff. We've received a father. You've got a father who's an everlasting dad, who loves you, who picked you before he ever made the world. He chose you right back then. And then when you were born, he adopted you into his family. And he loves you with this consistency. And he watches us when we sleep. And he delights in us when we're awake. And you can never escape his love. You can never get away from it. You know how many people in this world want a dad like that? That's what we receive. We received a savior, Jesus Christ, who is powerful and mighty and who is merciful and kind. And those things don't usually go together, power and kindness, but in him they do. And the way that he saves is not by ordering us around, but by sacrificing himself for us. Like, he gives his own life for us. And then he goes further than that and says, look, I'm always going to be with you. You become part of my family and I'm always with you. I'll bear these scars for all eternity that show and speak of my love for you in a sacrificial way. We've received not just the Savior, Jesus Christ, but the Holy Spirit who comes to live in us. God comes to live inside of me. I've got him inside me. Do you know how many people, again, would give their right arm for that? People who are searching for God, or in the Old Testament, God just lived in this building that you couldn't go into. And what we're saying here is he's poured into your heart. So there's nowhere you will ever be where he won't be. There's no room you can hide in that you will be able to hide away from him in. He's in you. Every morning when you wake up and you have breakfast, you can have a conversation with the Lord and heaven and earth. He can speak to you. He can use you. He can take your weakness and transform it for his strength. And you've got him. What you've received is a mercy that is literally, it's endless. It is as endless as the sea, the song that we sometimes sing. And what it means is everything you ever do, every mistake you ever make, he will forgive you. That's not a permission slip to do whatever we want. But what it means is his grace is bottomless. It's endless. You can never find the end of it. There's no gods that any humans have ever spoken of that come close to, they even touch in a tiny bit the God of Christianity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and you've got him. Yeah. We've got him. We've got him. So what are we comparing ourselves with? You got some new trainers. You know, wow, that's great. And that is great. But we've got him. And I know what I'm saying is this isn't going to solve the problem straight off the bat, right? Because we'll go back this afternoon and we'll compare ourselves to somebody else. We will. And you'll be like, you know what? I hear that. And I get that God's amazing and I've received God, but I'm still jealous that she's going out with him and not me. I still feel like I'm the one sitting on the sidelines and everyone else is noticed, but no one notices me. And now I feel worse because I know I'm jealous and I know I shouldn't be, but I really am. And I understand that. What this is a starting place. And this is recognizing what's going on when we're doing that. And what it's become for me is it's like a little trigger when I feel myself doing that, because I've come to see in a clearer way now, what that comparison does is it steals my joy and it robs my strength. And it's asking ourselves the question, does he satisfy me? Really and truly, does he? And there'll be times when he does, and there'll be times when he doesn't. And the times when he doesn't, those are the times that we come back to remind ourselves again of who it is that we worship and what he thinks of us and what he has planned for us. And so let the Lord, next time you compare yourself to someone else, just let him gently ask you a few questions. Question one, didn't we have a deal? You give me you and I'll give you me. Question two, can't I bless who I want? Hey, isn't that how you got in anyway? And question three, are you jealous? Are you jealous, Andy? You dummy. You've got me, you muppet. Look at me. I'm incomparable. Look at me. I love you. Look at me. I'll never leave you.